Welcome to The Created Life. Each week, The Created Life podcast offers insightful, inspiring interviews with entrepreneurs, creatives, and people just like you about being empowered, living with vitality, and creating positive change in the world through creative action. The Created Life covers a wide range of topics relating to personal growth, adventure, inspiration, business, social impact, fitness, and health. My name is Damian Taggart. I'm a serial social impact entrepreneur, and I'll be your host on this journey. Thanks for joining me for this episode of The Created Life. Hi, and welcome to episode 2 of The Created Life. This week's interview is with Erwan LeCour, a French-American movement guru and founder of MoveNat, a system for training natural movement. Erwan has a brand new book out called The Practice of Natural Movement, Reclaim Power, Health, and Freedom, available now. Erwan invited me down to beautiful, sunny Tulum, Mexico to interview him for the podcast while he was there teaching some MoveNat courses. I jumped at the opportunity for a temporary escape from the clutches of winter. This was my first trip to the Yucatan, and I got a chance to explore beautiful Tulum, visit a freshwater cenote, and even do a one-mile swim from the main beach at Tulum over to the Tulum ruins. I met up with Erwan the following day, and as you'll soon hear from our interview, we had a tough go finding a reasonably quiet place to record. The entire neighborhood we were in was under construction, so we wound up doing the interview in an upscale hotel lobby. After the interview with Erwan, I got to participate in a two-day MoveNat combative workshop that taught real-world self-defense skills using the foundations of natural movement set forth by the MoveNat curriculum. I found the experience of the combative training to be very worthwhile. It focused on simple tactics that are applicable in realistic street fighting type situations. The techniques taught were simple and effective. The course focused a lot on the psychology of not being a victim and being able to react and think in stressful circumstances. The course also taught situational awareness and the psychological aspects of self-defense. During one of the drills, I even got to experience what it was like to be tasered while being beaten on by about 8 of my classmates, while at the same time having the instructor shout out a series of random numbers for me to remember when the beating was finished. In this episode of The Created Life, Erwan and I discuss a whole bunch of things, including the origins of MoveNat, the value of allowing children to be in situations that have a certain degree of risk to support their natural instincts and development. We talk about the idea that modern people are kind of like zoo humans. Erwan gives his take on Ido Portal's idea of movement culture. We discuss having a unified life and the unity between the mind and the body. We even discuss why we evolved to have brains and why having a vision is more important than having a dream. We even get into Erwan's vision of what he calls a reverse zombie apocalypse. So despite there being a little background noise, I think this is a really great discussion, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. I'll leave some links on the description of this show for you to learn more about Erwan's work and MoveNat. I hope you enjoy the show. I really appreciate you inviting me down here to Tulum, Mexico, and kind of creating that possibility for me. I hadn't even, hadn't even considered coming here, and then here it is. So it's been great. It's been fun. So I don't know. Do you want to? Yeah, we can just. Yeah, we're already recording. We can just jump into it.
Let's jump into it.
So for listeners who maybe don't know who you are or don't know about MoveNat, would you give a real quick encapsulation of what MoveNat is and just kind of introduction to it?
Sure. You could see MoveNat as a physical education system. So it's going to be your fitness program, but fitness not just to burn calories and trying to look better. You will look better, by the way. But think of what you could actually do with your body, with your movement skills, and that would be useful in the real world. We're talking about that ability to simple, for instance, a day-to-day situation where you need to deep squat and then you would need to get down to a sit. just sit on the ground or on the floor, and getting back up without using your hands. Could you do that? A lot of people actually don't even know if they can or not. And when they try, they realize that they can't. It's just not possible. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a study that shows that it has to do with longevity, which means that if you're more functional that way, you have those practical abilities to move in ways as simple as getting up and getting down, your longevity will be better. So that's one example. But you could also think of more challenging situations of life where, who knows, you would have to run, you would have to climb or jump or lift and carry something or somebody to help them. So the point is, how well will you operate your body? Do you even know? Have you tested that? And would such real-world capability rely only on, say, strength and conditioning? Is it just the size of your muscles and that's it? Or wouldn't be the foundation you need to be really capable? A set of movement skills, which I call natural movement.
Cool. Yeah, and so you've basically developed a system of natural movement, like a methodology for teaching natural movement and for teaching people to coach others in natural movement.
Yes.
One of the things that I think people would want to hear about is like, you know, what was it in your life that kind of, what was the spark for you that got you, that kind of put you on this path initially? Like, how did you, you know, decide to do this as a kid, or at what age was that for you?
So everybody starts with the same natural movement journey when you're a kid, and without receiving any form of instruction, before you are even able to form a thought or pronounce a single word, you're at it. You are moving naturally. You're not doing yoga, you're not doing Tai Chi, you're not doing bicep curls. You're not sent at 3 months old to a gym so you can get strong enough and isolate your muscles with exercise machines so that ultimately you could maybe stand and you know, just have movement or your own locomotion independence. You just develop it instinctively, which really shows that's universal. I re-explain all of that in my book, by the way. So my journey starts like just like yours, just like anyone's. It starts on the ground, on the floor, when you're a baby, and you start to crawl and to find ways to posture up, position, and stabilize your neck so that you could be holding a seated position. And then you go on your knees and, you know, knees and hands and baby crawls and this kind of thing until you finally can stand. And standing, even before you can possibly walk, just standing is a feat of not just strength, it's a feat of also of skill. It's a very human skill, bipedal stance and then motion. So the point is, natural movement, it belongs to all of us. But then I was lucky because I lived very close to a fantastic environment, natural environment, that was made of hills and woods and massive boulders. And so not only that, the environment was there in my early years, childhood, to move freely, but my parents would encourage me actually. With my dad, he would tell me, okay, climb there and jump down here and crawl through this and whatnot. So the message was, not only you are allowed to do it, but you should do it. I want you to do it. I encourage you to do it. And that's how you get skilled and strong and healthy.
Cool. So is that something that, is that something that you think about as a parent a lot? And is that something that you, I think there's a culture in parenting right now that's like, you know, the primary goal is to protect children from potentially hurting themselves. And for me as a parent, it seems like that, you know, I was lucky to also have like a natural like playground where I grew up. Like, I remember my friends and I, in maybe third grade, we would go into the mountains behind where my friends lived in Los Alamos, New Mexico, and just explore. And I don't think any adults had any idea where we were. Like, we just were able to just, you know, freely play. And I feel like there's a pretty big shift away from that kind of freedom right. for children. Like, what do you think about that?
Well, there's a reason why Richard Louv, hopefully I pronounce his name right, wrote that book, Last Child in the Woods, because it is indeed a modern phenomenon where people grew up. Oh yeah, we need to tell your audience that we are in a hotel lobby right now, so it's like in vivo ambient noises of life and people just,
yeah.
you know. So, which I love the conversational, you know, very relaxed way to approach this podcast, by the way. So, what you're talking about are helicopter parents, the parents who are constantly hovering over their kids in a protective fashion, which is... It is an instinct, but it is also a culture, and it's a culture of not trusting, being actually anxious, mm-hmm. and as a parent, I let my kids do a lot of movement, climb trees, and all of that. Do I get anxious sometimes about their safety? Am I concerned sometimes about their safety? Absolutely, since they're little kids. But you also need to be there. Mm-hmm. So here's the point. If you don't want to pay attention to the movements, then it's better that you just tell them, don't move, don't do any movement, don't take any risk, because I don't want to give you the attention that you deserve or that you need for me to make sure that you are safe. But if you are actually an attentive parent, instead of overprotecting them, you would support what they want to do naturally by instinct. You would be there for them, and you would also trust them. If you don't trust them, you are sending them the message unconsciously that they can't be trusted and that they should not trust their own movement. Mm-hmm. What's up with that? Because it's a huge disservice to their psychological development, not just physical development. So as a parent of three kids myself, three young kids, I do what my parents did with me. I encourage them to, I support what they naturally do. And also I participate. I climb a tree with them. I jump an obstacle with them. I go on all fours and crawl with them. This is without instruction, because I'm an instructor in how to do all those movements efficiently. But at this stage, I don't really bother them with technique, because I let them explore freely. I don't want them to think that it's some kind of intellectual pursuit. I let their instinct take care of pretty much everything. And later on, at a different stage of their development, I will start to teach them particular techniques so that they can improve their game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I took the MoveNat level 1 training, or level 1 and 2 with Cameron Prado in Houston. And yeah. One of the things that was really interesting to me about that was he talked a lot about the concept of the zoo human. And I think, were those your words, or...
They were, but also it is also the a scientist called Edmund Morris who wrote a book. I think was it called The Human Zoo or no, The Naked Ape.
The Naked Ape. Yeah, okay.
In The Naked Ape, he makes that metaphor, brilliant one, that we're, you know, people, modern humans who live in a city are pretty much like animals in a zoo, so we would be zoo humans. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a brilliant metaphor, and I've been using it often. because it really, in just with just two words, it reminds us that a lot of our, not only our environments, but our behaviors are artificially shaped by both the environments we've built and designed for ourselves, and our also culture, which culture induces artificial behaviors. And that there are some convenient aspects of modernity. Clearly, we are in it, we're using it, it's part of our lifestyle. We use computers and fly planes and whatnot, drive cars, send emails. But there's a point where it can actually cause us a lot of stress, and that divorce from our original instincts and behaviors can cause us to actually become a little neurotic in some ways, you know, feel trapped, feel frustrated, feel a lot of diversity of negative thoughts or emotions that we may not be able to identify the cause of it. And that's simply because of that mismatch between us with our instincts and needs, original needs as human animals, and what society and culture imposes us to do and be. There's something I want to talk about, is the fact, you know, because you talked about natural movement, right?
Mm-hmm.
And hey, we haven't even, because I talked about what movement is, but not what natural movement is.
Totally.
You see, what is interesting is that today, if you say natural movement, you naturally imply running, jumping, all of that. 10 years ago, I was the first person to actually use that term and to define it the way a lot more people know it today. But everybody back then was asking me, what is it? Yoga, Tai Chi. So when I use natural movement to explain, okay, what is movement? That's natural movement. You mean yoga? So a lot of people now are like, oh yeah, natural movement. Trust me, I started that thing from scratch. Nobody knew, and nobody valued it. Nobody used it in any hashtag or in any...
Totally.
Right? And that's why I made it a USPTO trademark, by the way. I made it a USPTO trademark not only because it was technically possible, but because I thought, I'm going to work my arse off to work on that concept, to define it, to make it popular, until it's going to start to have commercial value, and then you'll have all the sharks and all the, you know, all the people are going to want to jump on that bandwagon as if it has always been there. And especially not, you know, the big players.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what if CrossFit want to do natural movement, CrossFit natural movement, or Equinox, or these guys? I'm like, I better defend the territory that I create.
Right, totally.
And does it prevent anybody from moving outside? No.
Right.
Does it prevent people from trying to commercially exploit it?
Mm-hmm.
And even say, that's my natural movement, it's different, and this and that, and you create a whole delusion.
Like, what do you think about people like Ido Portal?
He doesn't talk about natural movement. He talks about movement culture, which is fine. Here's the thing. Movement culture... what does that mean? Does that mean that all of a sudden a lot of people start moving and movement is everywhere? Not really. Usually you start to have the emergence of a culture when actually, let's say a movement culture, it only highlights the fact that most people are physically idle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you have a solution out there that starts to emerge, and you're like, yeah, everything changes, a lot of more people, like more organic food, and this and that. So like, that's it, we're getting there. No, you're not getting there. It's actually, it even underlines even more that there is a huge problem. So that's number one. Number two, okay, if you do skateboard or ping pong, that's movement, right? Mm-hmm. Are you part of a movement culture? Yeah, so anybody who's got some form of physical activity, any physical activity implies movement. Mm-hmm. Therefore, you're part of a movement culture. Okay. Does that mean that you are moving naturally? No. Does that mean that you are physically capable in an unspecialized way so that you could respond to any situation of the real world that demands a physical response from you? Mm-hmm. No. So you can do Tai Chi, and that's great for you. But you're still terribly, say, for instance, overweight or skinny and with no strength. Mm-hmm. And you could not actually run or swim or defend yourself. Mm-hmm. But you do Tai Chi, which you do, I don't know, 20 minutes a day, maybe, if you're dedicated. But most of your physical behavior in a day is still to sit at a desk. Mm-hmm. All right? So are you part of a movement culture? Maybe. Okay. Is that actually healthy? No. Still not.
So, yeah, what do you think about, we've talked about a number of things that are kind of like the relationship between sort of physical health and maybe mental health or emotional health. And like, can you talk a little bit more about how you see those things being related, or what is your view on kind of the role of physical health in terms of just the well-being of a person?
Well, obviously we are not compartmentalized beings, mm-hmm. even though culture would like us to believe that we are, because mm-hmm. It's like if there's a you that is working, and then the you that is off work, and a you that is doing meditation, and then it's almost like another person who is doing movement, and then, you know what I mean?
Totally.
That's not what it is. It's the same you doing all these activities. So is there an interaction between your body and your mind? Well, clearly, even some scientists start to work on that concept that it's the same. It's the same.
Yeah.
There's no real separation between the two. Even though a lot of people are really trapped in their head, means they're really always thinking and cluttered with almost no physical life except for maybe standing and walking a few steps to the next seat. So we want to ask ourselves, why do we even have thoughts? What do we even have a brain? And is the body optional? Some neuroscientist like Rodolfo Linhas expressed the intuition or the hypothesis that which we call thinking is the internalization of movement. Hmm. What this would mean is that we have a brain for movement, and it's because we can move that we can think. Science shows that only living beings who have a need for locomotion, they move through space, have a brain. Plants don't have a brain. That is not to say that they may not have some form of consciousness, but they don't have a brain because they don't move. So that's a very interesting observation, because we have a brain. And that brain is originally for movement, just like in any other living creatures, because if we were supposed to be like green plants in a pot and not moving, we wouldn't have that amazing piece of biotechnology, which is still at this point extremely, we know very little about it. We wouldn't have that. So the reason why we have such a complex brain, large brain, and that is able of such complex operations originally is not just for thought, and it's not just for, or at least just not for speech and having a civil conversation about the history of art, mm-hmm. Or fashion, or talking about the wine, you know, wines, sure. Fine wines from France, whatever.
Right.
You know, something abstract and sophisticated like that. Now, the original reason is that we're wild animals in the wilderness having to survive. And what do we need to do? We need to move through space. We need to navigate through complex environments. We need to operate through complex and sometimes highly challenging context. So imagine yourself, you're on you're point A and then you need to go to point B. And point A is on top of a tree branch, and point B is a rock in the middle of a river where you need to go because you gotta go fish or something. What it takes to be able to move your body and to get from that point A to point B basically is to be a fortune teller. You look at space, you look at the obstacles in the way, and you're able to have already an idea of where you're going to step, how you're going to get there, while being able to adjust your motion on the way to not stumble, to not hurt yourself, to be there as fast as you can, maybe at the exact time where you're going to, you know, catch what you need to catch or avoid what you need to avoid. It's a crazy kind of calculations that the brain's got to do. And that's why we have a brain.
Totally, that's really fascinating. I've never heard that connection before of only things that move develop a brain, yep. But that's really cool.
Yep. Another scientists discovered that, not me, but but as of the observation that you've got to anticipate and kind of be a fortune teller of what's going to be next. Basically, you start to visualize your body where it's going to be, and even every step or every move you need to do for your body to be propel itself or transport itself through whatever environment where mm-hmm. you are. That's my observation, and I know how much mindfulness this requires. Mm. A lot of brain activity. You can just feel it, not just in your body, but also in your brain. It's not just a purely physical process. That would be lacking observation to think that way.
Totally. Another thing that I think is interesting about your story is just that the building of a brand, you know, so you I think it was in your mid-30s you said that you sort of got the idea for MoveNat as a business, and took about 2 years to kind of get that up and running off the ground. Like, can you talk about that experience of really getting started? And I mean, I think a lot of people are trying to do similar, you know, follow their own passion in some way and follow their own kind of vision for what they want to create, and could maybe get some inspiration from your path and maybe some of the obstacles that you had to confront when you're doing that.
Yeah, well, it is true that, you know, nobody knocked at my door to say, hey, you're going to do this, or bootstrap me, and I didn't have like a angel investor or anything like that. I really literally started with a vision, what I call a vision. So I like to call that a vision, because some people like to talk about dreams, but I like to say, dreams is for dreamers. The problem I have with dreams is they're beautiful, but dreams, you may pursue them or not. Whereas a vision is something, it's more than something you hope for, or that you believe you could maybe achieve or something. You just really, because you see it, and you see it, of course it's in the future, but you see it as if it is already here. You already made it happen. You know that. You don't believe in that, you know it. That's a vision. And yeah, it's to the point that whenever you do something, say do some work, make some decision, make any step in the direction of your of unfolding your vision, it's almost as if you are in the past. It's a little maybe weird to understand, but it's as if you remember your vision has already happened. Mm-hmm. So what you're doing, it looks like you're doing your efforts, your decisions, your work, all of that. the steps you make looks like they are necessary to make it, that vision happen. But then you remind yourself, no, it has already happened. So you have the time perception backwards.
Hmm. That's interesting.
You see it unfolding, yeah. But you know that it has already unfolded.
So given that perspective, were there times when you had like doubt about what you're doing? And did you ever have a feeling of like...
Nope. Never. Otherwise, if you doubt, then that's not a vision. Mm-hmm. That's a dream. That's a dream, and you wonder if you're going to live a dream or not. If you'll get to see it in manifested in reality or not. And that's why it's a dream. A vision mm-hmm. has already manifested itself through your conscious and creative mind. And what you unfold, what you see unfold in front of you, so make progress, the vision makes progress, is the progress as a manifestation in what we call the real world. That has to do with the principle of time, perception of time.
Mm-hmm.
But a vision, when it happens in the here and now, so you see it. And in the end, there's only the now. So it's
cool.
I don't know. Maybe it's a little too philosophical.
No,
but,
it's okay. I think it's good.
But this being said, I was saying nobody. It's something that happened or that I saw, that envisioned in my mind mm-hmm. before it was a reality in any shape or form.
Mm-hmm.
And what does it take? What is it that you want to express through a vision? When you have a project, what is a project? Everybody's got a project. And it's easy to have a project, and it's easy to have ideas. It's the implementation and to have the consistency and the self-discipline and also, again, the vision, the more than the belief, more than the hope, but the knowledge that it has happened. This is what you need to truly be successful. Otherwise, yeah, things are gonna apparently rely on luck.
Mm-hmm.
But luck doesn't really play much in terms of vision. So the goal and the idea was, and the excitement and the reward is to see, to be there to witness the manifestation in the as a physical reality that you can enjoy, that people can see or that other people can benefit of.
Mm-hmm.
Of that which was only an idea in your mind in the first place.
That's cool. So
the rest of practical stuff, the brand, you talk about the brand, the company, mm-hmm. those are tools. And I could have chosen no company, no brand, and be like, no, I want to be pure, or I don't want any of that. But the thing is, we also work in a world that's the real world, that has some constraints or some realities. And I thought that I would, what I do, and I'll be wrapping that up with that. I thought that I would be more relevant and inspiring potentially to others if I could demonstrate that a project, as much as it may sound to people like, well, you're a dreamer, it's like, this is not the real world, this is not this and that. I'm like, I don't care for that. That's my vision. And I want to make it a company and a business for a very simple reason. So number one, very practical. I'm just like anybody else. I need to feed myself and my family. And then whoever is going to want to be involved in this, they want exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to just be having some kind of philosophy and being kind of that pureness. And then what are we going to do? Say it's based on a teaching method. Do you want to be volunteering your whole life? And while other people are busy actually taking care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So if I want this to be taught, we need to create economic opportunities so that it's sustainable from a professional standpoint. And when we reach that point, then we can have people who are like, I love that concept, I love what they teach, I love what they do, I would love to do it for myself because it's my passion, and I would like to do it for others because I know how it may benefit many people. And I can do that also as a job,
right,
as my own, you know, way to take care of myself. Now it works. Now it's sustainable. So mm-hmm. it's not just, oh yeah, pure philosophy and this should right. be for free and whatnot. Like, no, that's not how it works.
Totally. That's helpful. So if there was like one practice or one takeaway that you could say implant like a virus that spread through everyone on Earth, like what would you want to, like what is one idea or practice or thing that you'd want to spread to all people?
The exact opposite of a zombie apocalypse would be a natural movement paradigm.
Can you describe that a little bit, what that would look like?
It would look like people of whatever background and identity, because honestly, like, who cares? Mm-hmm. That's the thing about natural movement, is that it's truly universal. It doesn't matter your age, your gender, and all mm-hmm. these considerations, ethnics, and how much money you got in your bank account, and this and that. It's truly universal. It brings us together. So I could imagine people who would practice those ancient and actually timeless movements every day, make themselves healthier, stronger. The somewhat tagline of my book is Reclaim Power, Health, and Freedom. And I mean it. Natural movement practice, and actually we haven't even really taken the time to define it. It's,
yes.
You know, like you have all those ground movements, jumping, crawling and rolling and getting up, getting down, standing and walking and stepping over and under and stepping out, stepping in any way, and running and then jumping. And again, there's many more ways to jump than just one way. And climbing, which includes so many ways to hang and then actually climb or traverse on diverse surfaces. It's a very, very wide scope of movement patterns and techniques. And you need to practice all of that to really be capable physically in the real world. You want to think of, say, what would a firefighter would have to do? Well, potentially, given the amount of situations they may encounter in their professional life, all of those. Mm-hmm. All of those. So it's, right. it's not like 10 movements, 10 functional movements, and that's it. You're going to be ready for anything. That's not how it works. So I could imagine this being a physical education system and program for all kids everywhere. Mm-hmm. Because seriously, do we receive education and become grown-ups just because we can do some basic mental math and we know how to read and write and this and that? But normally, we should also receive a physical education that enables everybody to be able to be self-reliant and capable mm-hmm. in the real world. Do you need to run? You can run. Do you need to jump and cross an obstacle? You can do that as well. And with that, and just finish that up, with that, what I know, and we've established the relationship, extremely tight, intimate relationship between brain activity, which is cognition, which is being smart, being alert mentally, you know, not being in a kind of mental fog, and movement. So there is clearly a link between also being physically active, not just by doing exercise machines, but by doing movements that resemble the very kind of movements our brains was designed to perform. Mm-hmm. So when you move naturally, basically it's an amazing cognition booster. And when you boost your brain through movement, through practical and adaptable movement, which is natural movement, you will benefit in terms of neurogenesis, you know, the regeneration of your neurons, but also in terms of working memory and other aspects of cognition, that will carry over to anything you do in your life, that you're doing poetry, mm-hmm. that you're doing engineering, that you're doing, you're working on any kind of project to make yourself, you know, say a nomad worker who can work on their own company or something. That's what it does to you. It's an amazing asset in your life. So imagine people with boundless levels of energies, with walking the streets, with self-confidence that stems from that real-world physical capability. That's the opposite of a zombie apocalypse. Mm-hmm. That's the opposite. Yeah. You know, that's the true meaning of empowerment, because it does not rely on expectations from whatever, a government or something external to you. It relies on knowing and nurturing, developing what you know you're capable of. Self-empowerment means I become more capable physically, mentally, and why not spiritually.
Absolutely, that's really great. Yeah, I think the anti-zombie apocalypse is a cool is a cool metaphor. So in that, you know, with that paradigm, and we can wrap up soon.
All right.
I know you got to get back to your family and everything. But I think
I'm a bit sad because I've really enjoyed that convo.
Yeah,
and
great.
I appreciate your questions.
Me too. You know, it makes me think about what do you say to people who are stuck at these desk jobs, like, you know, 8 or 10 hours a day, and like in this, I mean, what in your view should these people quit? What should they do? Should they change? Should they demand something different in their lives?
Well, yeah, they, you know, nobody's going to knock at your door to mm-hmm. make you change. It's mm-hmm. on you. Change is on you. Do you really want it? And if you say yes, then do you really value it? And then if you say yes, then okay, then show me the money, you know, like do something, mm-hmm. Start educating yourself, start to do some basic movements, start to deep squat, start to maybe move on all fours. And then again, the education part is very important, because it's true that, and it's regrettable, but it's a fact that most people are so separated from their natural movement, instinct, and potential that they would not even know what to do. And so that's why I wrote a whole book mm-hmm. for it, The Practice of Natural Movement, published by Victory Belt. We have movnat.com, movnat.com, where people can find a lot of information, register to local workshops, find local certified trainers, or do online coaching. And we'll soon have a new website called naturalmovement.com, as you would expect, where there will be online courses as well. So all this participates to the necessity of providing some form of education to teach people something that, you know, most of us have really forgotten. And when we become aware of it again, it doesn't mean that we know exactly what to do or have good ideas on what to do. So we're providing all those tools, all that information, all that education in a variety of ways that I've just mentioned.
That's really great. Yeah, thank you. Thank you again for your time. And I'm really excited to get into the combatives course in the next day or two here in Tulum. Yeah, so I definitely I'll provide links to all of your stuff, the book, and the new website, and yeah, hopefully maybe we can continue this conversation at another point. Kind of go
with great
go
pleasure. I appreciate
it,
Damien. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's it for this week's installment of The Created Life. Check back in the next week for my interview with Lutheran pastor and social justice activist Bill Thompson. If you'd like to support The Created Life, please check out our online store, or even better, come with me on one of our upcoming transformative adventures. Wildest has 2 life-changing experiences lined up for this July in Uganda and Rwanda. So visit the website and you can learn more about how you can get involved and come along and get to meet me in person and have a really, what I hope will be a transformative experience for your life, unlike anything else that you've done before in East Africa. Looking forward to meeting you in real life, and until next time, This is Damian Taggart signing off.